Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Are you interested in angels, demons, spirits, ghosts, and monsters? Are you curious about their origins, tales, and influence upon history and on the present day? If so, sit back, relax, and welcome to Southern Demonology, the podcast that explores all of this and more.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, all. Welcome back to another episode of Southern Demonology. As always, I'm your host, JJ. Today, we continue our conversation with Father Michael Birdsong. In this episode, we go over some of the specifics around exorcism, along with some of his experiences over the years. We also touch on a pretty controversial topic, which is the unforgivable sin in Christianity. You don't want to miss that. Last Friday, October 7th, was the release of the very first episode of the mini-series dedicated to horror reviews, which is rather unimaginatively called Southern Demonology Bites. And that episode focuses on two different series that start with the word yami, the Japanese word for darkness. Yami Douga, also called Tokyo Videos of Horror, and Yami Shibai. If you haven't had the chance to check that out, then please do so. Another one will be coming your way this Friday, as well as every Friday in October. The final part of this episode is 43 minutes in length, so let's not waste another minute. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the conclusion of our interview with Father Birdsong, entitled The Kingdom of Hell. I've got a few other questions, more in particular around exorcism in general.
Okay.
So how do you normally prepare a room in which an exorcism is to take place in?
Well, first and foremost, JJ, while I'm preparing a room, so to speak, and 9 times out of 10, I try to get that person to the church. I have them come before the altar or the table of the Lord to where that presence is there. Because, you know, as you refer to Catholicism, you know as well as I do, where the altar of the Lord is, Christ is there in the real presence, right? And so I try to do it there, but then I also prepare myself. I will actually call my mentor and our canon, which is our canon theologian who lives not too far from me, and I will go to confession myself and to make sure that I am without blemish in that moment. You know what I'm saying? To where the enemy does not have anything that it can attack me with. And but I prepare the room, or right in front of the altar area, I will have a chair in which I will have the person sit in. First and foremost, and everyone needs to hear this, you do not do it alone. You need to, if you don't, I would say have two people with you. If you can't have two, at least have one. Number one, to help you, and number two, to be as a witness. And of course, to help restrain if things goes bad. I have never strapped someone down. I hope I never have to. But if I had to, I would. But like I said, I will have other people there with me to take care of that. But also I will sprinkle the area beforehand with holy water, and I will also sense the area, and I will also be dressed in my purple stole with my crucifix. All of that just for a sign and a symbol of, number one, the authority that Christ has given me, but also as a sign and symbol of Christ upon me with the presence of the crucifix around my neck. And the reason why I use a purple stole, because exorcism is also a form of confession, and also it is confidential, and I will never break that confidentiality. And that's why I dress the way I do.
Yes, sir. That makes total sense.
And I also use the Roman Rite more or less as a blueprint, so to speak, because there may be certain areas that you may have to go down that will maybe defer from the actual rite itself. But I use the Roman Rite because I believe in the church fathers. I believe in the history, the tradition. If it worked then, it's got to work now.
Absolutely. Well, that, and if you just read the Roman Rite as
if
written,
if you read it,
you'd be done in 15 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, you know what, JJ, you just brought up an interesting point. You said it'd be done in 15 minutes. Well, you know what, it might be done in 15 minutes, but it may take weeks.
Yeah, and that's something that people don't really understand. In movies, you need an old priest and a new priest, and
yeah,
and you're done within an hour and everything's great.
No. Well, see, that's what people don't realize. Well, we all remember the movie The Exorcist, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, what a lot of people don't realize is that's a true story, but it happened to a little boy.
Yep.
And that exorcism
months.
Yeah, 21 days, I believe.
Well, and it wasn't broken until the priest in question received a holy visage of
St. Michael. Yep. He called upon St. Michael, and that's when it finally broke. And see, that goes back to the book of Daniel, JJ, about the rulers, the powers, and the principalities. The angel of the Lord was hindered by the prince of Persia, right? And he had to call upon Michael, the archangel. Once again, that order. He had to call another angel in authority to help him. And, you know, we have to do the same thing. But see, most people like you and I from our past, I'm from Protestant background as well. We were taught here in the Bible Belt of America in the South that anything that looked like Catholic was of the devil.
Yep.
But what we failed to realize, no, that's our rich history. We're all Catholic. We just may not be Roman Catholic.
I'm so glad you said that because, yeah, growing up, not from my family, but from others that I knew, from some preachers that I knew, if it was even remotely Catholic, then it was all about eating babies and worshiping statues. And oh my gosh, it's kind of a miracle that I ever found my way into a Catholic church at all, honestly, just based upon what I've heard.
I'm laughing right. I just looked at Josh and said, I love this guy. But yeah, you're right. I mean, we're taught it's all taboo and not of God. And I'm like, okay, open your eyes, people, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. The moment you disavow your history, only bad things can come about. And that goes back to what you said about dividing. Yeah.
Well, I always tell people this, you know why Protestants are called Protestant? Because they protested against the church.
Yep.
We don't realize that.
That's exactly right.
I mean, although I'm of the International Communion of the Charismatic Episcopal Church, we're Catholic. We're just not Roman Catholic. We believe in the seven sacraments. We're evangelical because we're a people of the story. We're a people of Christ, and we tell the story, right?
Yes, sir.
We claim that we're fully sacramental. We believe in the seven sacraments of the church. There's just not two. We certainly don't just partake of the sacrament of Holy Eucharist once a quarter or twice a year. No, we do it every Lord's Day. That's what the book of Acts commands us to do. And we're fully charismatic. Why do we call ourselves charismatic? Because we believe in the charis or the charismata, as most would know. And what does that word mean? It means grace. we've all received grace and gifts of God, the Holy Spirit within the church. You see, all these things have to be together. We can't throw out the baby with the bathwater, right? That's an old Southern saying, isn't it?
But finer than the frogs here.
That's right. It all boils down to the ancient traditions of the church. And that's why I use the Roman Rite.
I love that answer. Now, I do have to ask you, in your experiences of performing exorcisms, now, of course, you know, you never do so in your own name. It's always through the authority of Christ and the church and of God.
Yes, sir.
But have you noticed that it has personally affected you in any way?
Oh, wow.
To the negative?
Man, you know what? Just like this latest incident that you discussed with Josh about the home deal.
Mm-hmm.
Man, and see, this is what people don't realize. Although we can invoke the name of Christ, it takes a toll on you. And by the time I left that home, I was almost physically ill. I was so drained. During the time, the charismata that I just spoke of, that grace comes upon me to sustain me.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I was a whooped puppy. I mean, I was physically, mentally, and emotionally drained to the point of nausea.
Bless your heart.
But see, I know the order, right? It all goes back to the order. And when we left there, we were in Fairhope, Alabama, and actually my archbishop has a church in Selma. So I made a little detour on the way back to Thomaston, Georgia, and I stopped in Selma, Alabama for ministry from my archbishop. And see, that's important because I got to understand that I'm not doing this on my own strength, and I'm not doing it out of the authority of the church. And once it's done, I need to return to the church for ministry my own self. I have to be ministered to. Remember Christ in the desert, in the wilderness? Mm-hmm. After 40 days, he faced the devil, right?
Right.
And then after that was done, God did what? He sent ministering angels to minister to him. And
that is a beautiful way of putting it.
You know, if Christ himself had to be ministered to after spiritual warfare, who the heck am I, JJ? You know?
I've heard and I've read so many tales of some priests, they have performed thousands of exorcisms. And then I've heard of others who have performed just a handful and they are left broken.
Oh, yeah.
Physically. And I've always wondered that strict dichotomy. You know, of course, every case is going to be different. That is easily understandable.
Yes, sir.
But what can bring someone to be able to perform, so many, and what can break a few just after a handful?
Well, do you remember me back in one of our early questions? I told you that I prepare myself.
Yes, sir.
And I prepare myself with what? Confession. And it goes right back to the scripture that we talked about. Who can ascend unto God's holy hill? You know, those with clean hands and a pure heart. And a priest cannot face a demonic presence and survive without the sacraments of the church. That priest, if he does not partake in the sacrament of confession, if he does not partake of the sacrament of the Holy Eucharist to gain strength, he's going to find himself defeated and worn out. And that is the very reason why I did what I did. I walked into that after the sacrament of confession and Holy Eucharist. And when I left with the sacrament of confession and Holy Eucharist. And see, we as the body of Christ, we have to remember what Christ said in John chapter 6. Unless you eat of my flesh and drink of my blood, what? You have no life in you. We have to partake of that life too, or we will be defeated and destroyed. And that's why so many priests have fallen after these things, because they walked in their own strength and not the strength of the sacraments of the church.
That brings up another question. Have you ever personally spoken with the possessing entity? And if so, have you ever been tempted to ask it questions?
I have spoken to the entity. The only question that I will ever ask, if it comes to that point, I will say, "Who are you?" Because if I know the name, I can attack the name. Does that make sense to you?
It does. In fact, I have another question on that one, on that exact thing. Is it absolutely necessary to get the possessing entity's name, or can you expel it without that information?
You can expel it without the information. I'm trying to think how to best answer that. Let me put it this way. Well, we just spoke about this a few moments ago. Jesus asked the demoniac, remember, "Who are you?" Mm-hmm. And he said, "We're legion," right? Because we're many. Well, that gives the exorcist strength. And see, names are powerful. The names gives us a seal that gives us an authority over the entity. Does that make sense?
It does.
If I got a name, for instance, I did a house blessing one time, and a girl was dabbling in witchcraft, Wicca, and she gave herself over to a demonic presence. Well, she wasn't there when I was blessing the home, okay? That's a whole nother long story. But when I was performing the exorcism of the home, God gave me a gift of spiritual discernment at that time. And I discerned Azazel. And come to find out, I said, "Look up under her bed," the person that was with me. And they pulled out a tote where the girl had been storing witchcraft stuff. And she had drawn a picture of Azazel to a T with colored pencils. So I knew right then to speak to that entity personally, which gave me more authority over it.
So you have actually had an encounter with Azazel?
Yes, sir. And it is powerful.
It's one of the most ancient names. Of course, we don't really understand the historical significance of the rite that is spoken about in Deuteronomy,
right,
involving the scapegoat.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's one of the most ancient, you know, named entities that we have in all of Christianity and Judaism.
Well, and see, that was also another case of JJ when it was over. I was spent, man. I was done for.
I could not imagine. Wow.
But now that young lady that had the trouble, 2 years after the fact, she is a beautiful, beautiful young lady and doing awesome.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear.
Her mother was actually at the class this morning and shared that story.
For the people in which you have performed exorcisms upon, I have read many accounts where they suffer massive memory loss during their time afflicted.
Yes.
Have you seen that to be true?
I have seen that to be true. Absolutely. It's kind of like they have a time of amnesia where they can't remember specific time frames. And of course, we know that's when the entity itself had taken over.
Right. Now, one other thing about the actual act, Father Martin, he would write about the clash, that moment where the exercising authority is directly, mentally, spiritually battling the entity itself.
Yes.
Is that always the case with your experiences, and how does that affect you? Like, what does that even like feel like?
Well, in the beginning, it was very much true. But after some experiences, I've come to know what to expect, and I can prepare myself more. But in the beginning, I would have that clash with the demonic presence. And in what I have experienced personally is I would have, the entity would put in like senses of doubt and unbelief into my brain, so to speak, my mindset. I would doubt myself. I would even, in the beginning, I would even doubt the fact that God could help me, you know, because I was very inexperienced and a novice, so to speak. And that's why we don't do those things alone, because the enemy wants to get into the mindset of the exorcist and make him doubt his faith. It makes us want to doubt our authority. It makes us want to doubt our even own self-being, if that makes sense to you.
It does.
But over time, you come to not to expect those things per se, but how to combat them and how to avoid them. And you get to a place to where you understand the scripture where it says to not give the devil place. Mm-hmm. You have to take absolute authority over it. You do not give it a chance to talk. You do not give it a chance to exercise its power. You do not give it a chance to speak doubt and unbelief. Because if there's anything that's in your heart that's not cleansed as the exorcist, it's going to come out. And it's going to come out during that time of exorcism, because the enemy wants to expose you as a sinner dog yourself. And see, that will make you go into a state of unbelief and doubt yourself. Does that make sense to you?
It does. In fact, I was going to ask you, so I know how you minimize your own attack service by participating in the sacraments. Is there anything that you do in order to help protect the assistance that you may have with you? I mean, I know it must be the sacraments as well, but are there any other measures that you take?
I do not have anyone assist me that is not partaking of the sacraments of the church.
Mm-hmm.
I do not have anyone assist me who has not sat through some type of training. This charismatic / type world that we grew up in the 80s about the believer's authority and all we got to do is speak the name of Jesus, that's enough to get your rear end handed to you.
Yep.
And so I do not have anyone assist me that has not gone through the training which I provide or has had experience in deliverance ministry. And they know that their first and foremost duties is prayer and intercession during that time. They are to pray. They are to say they're Our Father. They are to pray the prayer of St. Michael the whole time.
Okay.
Without fail, they are to be first and foremost a what we would call a prayer intercessor. And that's number one, they're interceding for the person, but they're interceding for the exorcist himself as well to give strength.
And so if you're going off from the Roman Rite, do they also play the respondent roles?
Yes, they do. Okay. Yes.
Awesome.
It just depends on how many I have with me, but we go through the rite, the beginning of like the litany, you know, and they will give the responses. But then when it comes to the actual exorcism after the opening prayers and rite,
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
That's when they will pray the Our Father and the prayer of St. Michael and intercede.
If you don't mind, let me ask you One other kind of preemptive question, and this is more around exorcism of place.
Okay.
When do you determine if an abode or a residence or a house needs to have a simple blessing, and when does it need an actual exorcism of place?
I hate to use a word that's pretty simple, but let me explain it to you this way. Let's say someone's moving into a new home, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or especially during certain times of the church year, like Lent, it's very common to do a house blessing. And the reason why we do house blessings is, number one, we want to set aside that home as a sacred place, right?
Right.
But also what we have to realize is, you know what? We don't know what we bring into our home throughout the year.
True.
I mean, we don't know what visitors bring into our home throughout the year. I remember one time someone gave me a gift, right? And I brought it into my home. Well, I didn't know that they had bought it through unknowingly a demonic area of a certain town. But I brought that into my home. I didn't know it, but all of a sudden I just started having bouts of depression. And then I said, you know what? That didn't happen until I brought this object into my home. So I blessed our home once more. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to exorcisms of a home, that's when you start seeing, well, recently a family brought in a girl that they didn't know it, but she was practicing Wicca in their home and brought all kind of satanic objects. Actually, I sent you pictures of a few of them, of the crystals and the skull crystal.
Mm-hmm.
They were put there to torment their own daughter and to bring division in their family. And all of a sudden they started seeing faces in the home and stuff sliding across the counters and pictures. My God, JJ, these things were fastened to the wall, but they were falling off. And see, I never do an exorcism without first making sure that that's what it really needs. Right. And so I interviewed the family and I walked through all the entire home to make sure that there was no drafts or no shadows or anything that could just make something happen just out of the blue innocently. No, right. This stuff was really happening. And so I knew right then that this home, we had to undergo the rite of exorcism of a place or region, which is different from a person, of course. I called my bishop and said, I said, hey, we got this going on. He called my archbishop and got permission for me to go to Alabama, which is out of my jurisdiction. And once again, order, I got permission of the bishop in that state to go there and then perform the rite of exorcism. And it was a battle. It was a battle, to say the least. But the greatest thing about it is going back to the sacraments of the church. Once we finished, we celebrated Holy Eucharist. And it was in the breaking of the bread and the partaking of the cup that broke it. And the climax of it all is I was able to baptize the daughter. And actually, she was at my class today, too. She drove 5.5 hours with her mom to come to this class.
Oh, wow. That is beautiful.
It is, isn't it? I was in tears.
I could only begin to imagine. And how about when it comes to a person? How do you, like, I know that the Catholic Church, they always insist upon doing psychological evaluations. Correct. And medical in order to determine. How do you handle that evaluation?
The same way. I will talk with the person and make sure that they're not. Well, I said it earlier. I mean, I understand that there is a real thing of mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And I will never negate that fact. And you can't cast out mental illness. I'm sorry.
Right.
But I will talk with the person, counsel them in a psychological way to make sure that they're really in their right mind, that they do not have some kind of underlying disease, or if some kind of medication is affecting them. And I have others beside myself to speak with them as well. Now, if a person is brought to me by another person, like a parent, and they're just off the wall, and I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that something is happening, I will perform it right then to get authority over it and calm them down and speak to them and carry on from there. Now, it's kind of like we talked about earlier, how every case is different.
Yes, sir.
There's not a blueprint, and we all know that, but 90% of the time, if I'm able to rule out mental illness and know beyond a shadow of a doubt, and I have spoken with my authority, my bishop, and they agree that it needs to be done, then I will move forward. But like the person I told you at the beginning, if I walk up on somebody and they're burning their face with a cigarette and look at me and said, "You're going to die," well, that kind of speaks for itself.
Accurate. Highly accurate.
I mean, that's undeniable right there, buddy.
Yeah, my goodness. I couldn't even imagine. Are there, going to these signs, are there any, like, besides, like, the a distortion or the eyes, are there any other, like, surefire signs that you've ran across that you know, yep, this is exactly what I'm dealing with right now?
Well, yeah, a couple. Number one is, like, the supernatural strength that we mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, you and I, we're from the South, right? We're from the Bible Belt of the South.
Yep.
And if I call myself many a times a Chattahoochee River redneck, right? If a Chattahoochee River redneck is speaking in some foreign language, there's a problem.
Accurate.
You know,
knowledge is secret.
I mean, if this guy's speaking in, let's just say, Latin all of a sudden, and he only has a 7th grade education, hey, what's going on with this cat, you know?
Have you actually ran across that?
I actually have one time, and I picked on it very quickly. But see, this was after I had gained some experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I count myself the least of my brethren, okay? I don't claim to be some kind of expert on it. I'm learning about this stuff daily. When I see something like that, I kind of pick up on it pretty quickly now. And there was one case, it was a gentleman. I ran across him mishap too, and he wound up at the church, was talking with me, and then all of a sudden he starts speaking in what I picked up was Latin. I said, okay, that language is not used anymore. And then he said, "I'm the king of Mecca," which you and I know what that means.
Yeah.
And okay, here I am alone. And that was the only time I've ever been caught alone. I basically just took authority over it right then, because I knew I had him sit down, and that was the first and only time that I've ever had to go through the rite by memory.
Oh, wow. I mean, to do it from memory,
yeah,
with no backup or assistance.
But it was something else, my man. I mean, if I was to tell you I was not afraid, I'd be lying.
You would, I think you would have to be superhuman to
yeah,
not be afraid in a situation like that.
But see, that's another thing. Every case, if any exorcist ever comes to me and tells me that they're not afraid, I'll call them a liar.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're dealing with something so much right, more powerful than yourself.
Exactly, exactly.
Whew. Yeah, just the idea of it petrifies me, honestly.
But
we're coming up on time, so let me ask you just a few last questions, if you don't mind. How can a person come to know if the demonic is acting in their lives?
Wow.
I know it's not an easy question to answer.
That's a hard question, JJ, because most of the time when these things are happening in the beginning, like I said earlier, it's ever so innocently,
mm-hmm,
that they don't know. But 9 times out of 10, if the person starts being aware, it's because they have this sense to know that they're facing some situations that they cannot face alone. Depression, anxiety. You know, it wasn't not too long ago that a lot of the teenagers went through this cutting stage,
yep,
where they would do self-harm. They don't want to do these things. And most of them will cry out for help. I will share this with you because he's sitting right next to me. And my own son went through that, Josh. And he had the sense to know that something wasn't right. You know, why am I doing these things to myself? So there is a period where they will know something is just not right. But it is also during that time where they will have to know that they can reach out for help. But in today's society, we have tend to brought shame on people like that, to where people are afraid to, God, JJ, you're going to make me start crying, man.
Well, I'm certainly not meaning to, but I will tell you this.
But I say that because it's my son and he's been through it.
Well, I should just tell you that in getting to know Josh over the last few months and speaking with him, you should feel inordinately proud because you have certainly raised a very fine and upstanding boy.
I'm very proud of him. But I say all that to say that there is a time where a person will know that something is not right. Mm. And we as the church, we as the bride of Christ have got to be open enough, JJ, to just listen. Because people will tell you, if we listen, that they're having a problem.
That's the saddest part.
We don't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah, we just completely ignore it. We're like, no, it must be something else, or no, that certainly can't happen.
You know, a wise man once told me one time that in today's society, most people listen to give an answer. They don't listen to understand.
Very true. And just from let's say that a person realizes something isn't right.
Uh-huh.
Or they're trying to maybe get ahead of whatever is happening. Are there any particular methods of protection that you recommend? I always ask people this question.
Yes. Yes, there is. Number one, JJ, is we got to let them know, hey, it's okay. I'm sorry that you're going through this, but it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we have to step in, protect them, and take care of them. Number two, we have to teach them. We have to teach them to take advantage of the sacraments during those times. We need to teach them the prayer of St. Michael. That is one of the most powerful prayers there is, man, because we're calling upon the Archangel Michael, the warring angel, to defend us in battle, to be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. And we say, may God rebuke him, we humbly pray, and do thou, O Prince of the heavenly hosts, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. We got to teach people that prayer. That is one of the most spiritual warfare prayers that we could ever pray. But the biggest thing is to listen. Listen to their story. Love them. Show them the grace of God. You know what? One of the biggest things that we need to let people know, JJ, is, you know what? God's not mad at you. God is not angry with you. God is not disappointed in you. God will not leave you or forsake you. All you got to do is cry out for help. And it's okay to cry out for help because you haven't failed. You're under attack and there's nothing that you can do about it. But you can call on God. You can call on your church family. And hopefully that church family will offer them help and not condemnation.
True. Now, and of course, the prayer to St. Michael, I mean, is so powerful, not only because of the words, which is very true, but you also have just Michael himself.
Absolutely.
Whose name is, you know, Mikael.
Who's like God. Yeah. I tell my wife all the time, my name is Michael. I say, Sonny, you know what that means? He who is like God. So you better listen to me.
I like that. And this is not relating to exorcism or anything like this. I have a question that I always like to ask anyone who is coming from a more Protestant background.
Okay.
And from the South. Where I'm from, and from a lot of the churches that I grew up around, they always like to talk about the unforgivable sin.
Oh, gracious.
And to them, it's usually suicide. If you kill yourself and you have turned your back upon God, and they won't even allow, like, the funeral homes will not even allow you to have a funeral.
Wow.
Is there an unforgivable sin in your books?
In my book, JJ, for you to commit an unforgivable sin, you have gone into the place that we call a reprobate mind, to where you have openly and blatantly rebelled against God and denounced him. Now, it's funny that you mentioned suicide, because I got something to say about that.
Please do.
I've been faced with that many times in my life. And I remember I had a 14-year-old cousin. I was 15. He was 14. And he committed suicide.
Mm.
Are you going to tell me that 14-year-old little boy was forsaken by God and sent to hell?
No, I don't believe that. In fact, when my eldest uncle passed away, his best friend couldn't take it. Because they did everything together in life. And he killed himself. My own mom had to clean up the blood stains from his trailer floor. And I can't ever think that this beautiful soul of a man would be condemned to hell just for that.
See, when someone commits suicide, we don't know what they're facing. I mean, for anyone to commit suicide, they are not in their right mind. Let's take the pharmaceutical world, for instance. What if they're on a medication that they have a severe reaction to, and that reaction causes them to have a mental breakdown and they kill themselves? Is that their fault? Let's say someone is suffering from schizophrenia and they're scared out of their mind. Are you going to tell me that they purposely set out to kill themselves? No, of course not. Well, let's just get down to the whole root of it. Let's look at Judas. I believe Judas got a bad rap. We don't know how Judas was tormented after he betrayed Christ. You weren't there. We weren't there. Other people weren't there. We don't know what was going through his mind. We don't know how he was affected. So to say that's one of the only problems that I have with quote-unquote Catholicism is that someone who commits suicide is damned to hell. And to deny them the respect and to deny the family the opportunity to grieve, that's not our place.
I knew I liked you. Thank you for giving your perspective on that. I truly appreciate that.
Well, during this interview, I've looked at Josh many times and said, I love this guy.
Well, I greatly appreciate that one, my friend. Well, let me ask you this. Final thing. Is there anything that I haven't asked about that you would like to speak about before we wrap things up?
Oh, wow, man. Well,
I know we've kind of danced all over the place.
We have covered a lot of things. We've gone down many rabbit holes. You've driven me to the point of tears and tugged on my heartstrings. We've laughed. We've cried. Yes, I do have one thing for you personally.
Sure.
One of the ladies that was at my class this morning, she was a witch for 20 years. I'm going to get her in touch with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would love that.
That would be awesome for you two to get together and talk. And to hear her story, man, she knows it inside and out. And
I do have a ton of questions on that front.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to be able to talk to her.
I would just say the biggest thing that I want everybody to walk away from this interview with is with the knowledge, as I said earlier, that God's not mad at you. That's my heart right there.
Well, I think that is a phenomenally important and beautiful sentiment to end this on. Would you mind just telling everybody where your website is and where they can find information about your book?
Oh, yes. www.becominghouseofprayer.com and also on Facebook, Michael Birdsong. And Josh, what else? Oh, we are putting together a YouTube channel, and once we get that fully in effect, I will let you know that as well.
Yeah, please do, because I will share that out, and I'll drive as, not that I have like the most influence in the world, but I would be happy to lend whatever I have to.
Yeah,
that.
I would highly recommend get the book, man. Get the book. Most people can't make it past the second chapter without having to have a come to Jesus meeting with themselves.
Well, I am going to go off and get that today myself, because I would love to read
it. The book is only $8.99 on Amazon.com, or you can get the digital one for, I think it's $2.99. So, it's not like you're spending a lot of money on it.
Well, and it sounds like an important message to know. I mean, for such paltry sums, that would definitely worth the exchange, I would think.
Just rest assured that it is written in plain Southern English, so it's easy to understand.
Well, I have to tell you, you have shared so much information with us and have done so from such a space of caring and humility and knowledge that I cannot personally thank you enough for that.
Thank you so much, sir. It's been my privilege. I mean, like I said, I yield to you. Your knowledge is greater than mine. I'm just a vessel.
No, I'm a bookworm, and that's about it. And I'm still learning everything I possibly can. I know nothing. I know that from a fact. So
very good. Very good.
All right, my friend. Well, thank you again. And yes, all that information will be in the show notes. In addition, on Friends of the Show, you can go to southerndemonology.com and find that under Father Michael Birdsong. Thank you again for all of your insights.
Yes, sir. My pleasure. And it's really been an honor to discuss this.
Thank you for listening to Southern Demonology. Find us online at southerndemonology.com, where you can find all of our social and podcasting links. Also, if you have a moment, please feel free to rate this podcast and leave any encouraging feedbacks that you may have. As always, I am JJ, and it has been a pleasure getting to talk to you today.